From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley reflects on his first term in office and what he hopes to continue working toward in his second. Then we'll learn how one Wisconsin community is taking steps to mitigate PFAS in drinking water.
There is huge growing awareness and attention and funding and rulemaking around the topic of PFAS. 7 years ago, no one knew what that meant.
Plus, we'll learn if a Wisconsinite found love on Fox's reality dating show, Farmer Wants a Wife.
Obviously, the decision goes both ways, and I had declared that I had feelings for him, and it's either like you're gonna go through a massive public breakup or you're gonna move forward with each other.
All that's coming up on Lake Effect, but first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us. Last week, David Crowley took the oath of office to begin his second term as Milwaukee County Executive. In April's election, Crowley was reelected with 85% of the total vote. Crowley's first term in office began in May of 2020, when he became the youngest county executive in the history of Milwaukee County and the first Black leader elected to serve in this role. Crowley has big goals for Milwaukee County that he wants to continue working toward, which he shared with me in studio. County Executive David Crowley, welcome to Lake Effect. Thanks for being here today.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So back in 2020, you had waited 6 days to find out the results of your first election running against State Senator Chris Larson. And this time around, you were reelected with 85% of the total vote, which is quite the difference of those 4 year segments. So how are you feeling now officially starting your second term versus what you remember feeling when you were first elected back in 2020?
You know, I almost forgot that I had to wait that 7 days. And if you think election day for candidates is crazy, just imagine that being 7 days. But I would say that I'm extremely excited, but also humbled. And so first and foremost, we'd like to say thank you to all of our supporters, everybody who came out this past April to vote for me, and glad that I actually got an opportunity to actually celebrate with family and friends, and, you know, not being sworn in front of my home, because I still think about, you know, wearing masks outside, onset of the pandemic. But we've come a long way, and so I'm really ecstatic about the next 4 years.
And you've certainly accomplished a lot in your first 4 years, but what do you feel is, say, like unfinished business about your first term that you look forward to continuing into your second?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've been able to do a lot, right? And I think about, you know, what we've been able to do, particularly as it relates to the sales tax, making sure that we can continue providing many of our programs and services. But it doesn't mean that we're out of the woods. And so we know that we're going to have fiscal challenges moving forward. And so some of that unfinished business is making sure that we can continue to build on our momentum. First and foremost, I think about the public safety building. It is the nerve system of our criminal justice system. And how do we rebuild that to make sure that it is safe for our courtrooms? It is safer for everybody who's walking into that building, and that we deliver fair and equitable justice for everybody that deserves it. I also think about the momentum we've built on affordable housing, right? Seeing some of the largest affordable housing projects happening in suburban communities. And we want to be able to double down on those efforts. So we're looking at how we can create a Milwaukee County Housing Trust Fund to help fill in the financing gaps that's going to in turn help create more jobs and more prosperity for our entire community. So that requires strengthening our relationship with both state and federal partners to bring those resources back home.
So we were talking about the differences of your 2020 swearing in versus today. I'm also going to take us back to 2020. This is an interview you did with our former news reporter, Angelina Mosher Salazar, and I pulled a clip from that first interview.
Okay.
So we'll take a listen real quick.
That glass ceiling for us has been glaring for a long time, and I think that now it is being shown to community members, to business leaders, to union folks, to everybody in every industry, that we have to be intentional when it comes down to diversity and inclusion. But more importantly, that we should also be at the table as far as being decision makers. And I think that the current county executive has definitely brought that to the forefront by claiming racism as a proclaiming racism as a public health crisis. And we just have to build upon that foundation.
All right. So that was part of your answer in response when Angelina asked you about what it meant to be the first Black county executive to lead during a public health crisis. And this kind of ties into your three priorities that you were able to set as executive. There's achieving racial equity, bringing back resources, and of course, at the time, it was very significant to recover from COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So with your three priorities, what do you feel you've been able to make the most progress on, and which have been kind of the most challenging to move forward?
Wow. So, you know, when I think about all three of those things, I would say we definitely made some progress on, right? I mean, onset of the pandemic, you know, the federal dollars that we received, we made sure to help businesses that were in nonprofits who were facing insolvency and helping them get the resources that they need to tackle many different issues on the ground and helping people stay within their homes. But, you know, we're still not out of the woods yet when it comes down to COVID-19, because I still think that we're still dealing with the ramifications just in general. You know, taking into account racism as a public health crisis, I think that we've been able to double down actually on that. We created our first strategic plan in over 20 years to make sure that we created a vision around racial equity. By achieving racial equity, Milwaukee County will be the healthiest county in the state of Wisconsin. And so we focused on three particular pillars, which is intentional inclusion, making sure that, you know, boards, commissions, our workforce represents the full diversity of our community, making sure that we bridge the gap, that no one falls through the cracks when services are needed, but also putting the money where our mouth is, and that's investing in equity. And so we have done more. But I will say that if I had to give myself a grade on all of this, it's still an incomplete. There's still so much work for us to do, but there's so many other folks within Milwaukee County and on the outside of our jurisdiction who needs to be brought to the table to continue to move these issues forward, because it's not just going to be the county or cities alone and towns and villages. We need state and federal partners at the table.
In addition to reaching outside the county for partners, you've also done a lot of work creating county and private partnerships as well.
Yes.
Have you seen kind of a shift in perspective when it comes to private companies and resources being more willing to work with county? Because sometimes that's a hard bridge to cross.
It can be a hard bridge to cross. But I will tell you that as we've been telling our story and people see the work that we're doing, nobody wants to be left behind, you know, and I think that particularly when it comes down to diversity, equity and inclusion, we've seen these levels of attacks at both the federal and state level. We've seen what is happening with our university system right now. But you know who's at the forefront? Private businesses. They understand how important diversity, equity and inclusion actually is to their bottom line and as it relates to their workforce. And unfortunately, you know, partisan politics has been getting in the way of really moving the needle on a lot of this work. And so, you know, it's going to take all of us coming to the table. And I will say that it's important that we keep talking about this, because it's not just race, right? We're talking gender. We're talking socioeconomics. We're talking sexual orientation. There's so much that we need to do to make sure that there's a level of equity across the board.
So shifting gears to one major thing in your last term, Act 12, it allowed a sales tax increase in Milwaukee County, as well as more shared revenue payments. And this, of course, primarily saved us from a looming fiscal cliff. But obviously, it's not a cure-all. There's still going to be fiscal challenges
Correct.
To come with any jurisdiction here. So what fiscal challenges do you think remain and are your priorities in your next term right now?
Oh, absolutely. One, we have a huge deferred maintenance backlog. You know, I think about our Parks Department, which is close to $500 million. And as we talked about at the top of this discussion, related to the public safety building, which would cost us, you know, close to about $500 million to invest in as well. And so we know that there's still going to be challenges. I think about our county transit system, right? And we know that making sure that they're fully funded is going to be a challenge moving forward. But the unique thing about Act 12 for me was it gave me an opportunity to travel across the state. And clearly, we have some of the same exact issues. I mean, all of the problems that are facing local communities are not all unique. And so it is my goal and my hope that the leaders who were able to come around and corral around Act 12, that we can do the exact same thing and look at tackling other issues that affect us locally. At the end of the day, Milwaukee County can't do this on its own. We need to create partnerships. And I will tell you that, you know, we are going to be bullish on making sure that we can strengthen more relationships, improve some relationships, and focus on how we can bring more resources back to all municipalities. Because what's facing Milwaukee County isn't just unique to us. It's facing every community across this state.
You mentioned a couple key things you want to make sure investment is put into. Do you think there's any areas that you think costs need to be cut? I mean, always that's something you grapple with budgets. But for example, like specific county facilities that you think might need to be offloaded?
You know, we've been looking at this for a long time, even prior to me being the county executive, and we have offloaded some assets. Maukee County, we're not in a position where we can cut anything. You know, we've cut many of our programs and services. So if we cut anything, we'll be cutting, you know, major programs and services that people rely on. Are there some things that we could be looking at with the city of Milwaukee, with other municipalities when it comes down to different departments or back office duties and responsibilities? Absolutely. And I think that we're going to continue to go down that road. I know a Wisconsin Policy Forum report was produced not too long ago looking at some of the things that the city and the county could be consolidating. But it's going to take a concerted effort, an intentional effort, not just between, you know, myself and our Milwaukee County board members, but all municipalities and their community leaders to figure out how we can actually save millions more dollars for the constituents that absolutely need many of the services that we provide.
And part of those services are public places that people enjoy, right? Like,
oh,
say,
yeah,
the Domes, Villa Terrace, Charles Alice Art Museum. Those are some of the ones that I've always kind of been in conversation
Absolutely.
With, like, what do we do? Where do you see, like, these properties?
It's a great question. You know, we've been supporting many of our cultural assets for a very long time. And not too long ago, there was a recent article about, you know, what are we going to do with the Villa Terrace and the Charles Alice Museum? And I think that we have to take a hard look at all of our assets. We're having conversations right now around the Domes, and I think that, you know, we've identified a way to actually save the Domes in a sense. And so please stay tuned and on the lookout for those things. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to resources. And as long as we have adequate resources, we're going to continue to support these cultural assets because they mean so much to this community. And so stay tuned on a lot of this work, but it's going to take, again, more partnerships from the state level to save many of these cultural assets.
With Act 12 being seen as a financial success for the county, the city, a lot of statewide support as well, it also came with restrictions that could limit the county's DEI efforts, some of the things we talked mm-hmm. about a bit earlier in our conversation. So do you personally feel like you've had to put the financial needs of the county ahead of equity goals at times?
No. So what's interesting about the Act 12 piece of legislation is that the DEI aspect does not affect Milwaukee County. It only affects the city of Milwaukee. And so our Office of Equity continues to do the work within the county internally and externally to make sure that we can build the capacity to continue to do the work that we're doing. So we have not had to balance what we want to do with DEI efforts and our financial goals, no.
So I do want to kind of touch upon this theme because a lot of the public might assume and have a hard time keeping track of what city, what county, what state, right? So with your position as county executive, obviously being nonpartisan as well, but mm-hmm. as you've reached and extended partnerships with this city, with this state, with different communities, what have you learned about you as a leader or leadership style that is most effective in creating partnerships that are outside of the realm of the county?
You know, a quote from Teddy Roosevelt actually comes to mind, and that is, no one cares what you know until they know how much you care. And I pride myself, you know, going back to my state legislator days, of bringing more people to the table and really having some real conversations. And a lot of the time, you know, there's a lot of transactional relationships, but we don't have enough authentic relationships of many of our political leaders. And so before I get a chance to actually talk about somebody being a Republican or Democrat, I want to know, what did you go to school for? You know, tell me about your spouse. Tell me about your children, if you have any. Tell me about the work that you do and your hobbies so I can get to know you as a person. But I see myself as a bridge or a tunnel builder. It's really about how do we continue to make bigger and broader connections and understanding what our shared goals really are and our shared priorities are so we can continue to move forward. And so I pride myself on bringing people to the table and really getting the work done. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, we don't have time to be talking. It's about what are we doing for the people that we serve.
So speaking of something that is taking a massive county, city, state level effort, we are going to host something called the RNC coming
yes.
up. Yeah. So here at WWM, we have a voter survey that continually collects information from the community. And we recently started asking about the RNC for okay. community members. And we got a lot of questions about how much it's going to cost taxpayers. So how would you respond to this question?
That's a great question. And TBD. And so particularly from a Milwaukee County perspective, you know, they're going to be utilizing our law enforcement, but also our Office of Emergency Management. That's, you know, making sure that we can create communications between all the law enforcement officers that are going to be on the ground here. But I do know that the city of Milwaukee has received a $75 million grant from the federal government to help offset some of the costs that they have to put forward. But when we need to get about the totality of what this cost is going to be, that is TBD. But it is my hope that when we think about the thousands of people that are going to be here, we got to make sure they're spending money, that they are actually contracted with businesses here in the city of Milwaukee, diverse women-owned, LGBTQ-owned, you know, disabled veteran-owned businesses. They're coming here so we can showcase what we have to offer. And as a Democrat, for me, it's important because I think I look at this as this is like the Final Four, right? This is billions of dollars of advertising where we can show off our downtown, show off our lakefront, show off, you know, our restaurant scene and nightlife to bring in more conferences. But I also understand that as a Democrat, I can't wait for them to leave either because I want to make sure that, you know, when it comes down to November, that we get our folks out to vote.
So do you have any concerns about hosting the RNC in your position? You know, how are you and other officials preparing for this massive event?
We're constantly in communications. One, I think it always boils down to safety, and not just safety when it comes down to those delegates and those members who are attending the conference, but also safety within our community because we're going to have a huge law enforcement presence. But we also need to make sure that we have things happening here. And so for me, you know, I'm actually going to be out of town for a NACO conference and coming right back to make sure that things go off without a hitch. But we're in constant communications about what is needed. I mean, one of the things that, you know, I know that's been talked about a lot is like where are protesters going to be staged at and making sure that we can keep folks safe and they can be able to, you know, exercise their First Amendment rights. So we're having a lot of different conversations. A lot of them we can't even really talk about, quite honestly, yet until we get closer to the date.
With being sworn in for your second term on May 9th, reflecting back on your first term in office, what's one moment that stands out to you or a handful that make you, you know, those moments where it's like, this is why I do this job, that make you want to continue serving the public?
Wow, that's a great question. Yeah, I would say those moments happen during the pandemic. When, you know, Milwaukee County was recognized for having the lowest unsheltered homeless population per capita than any other community our size across the entire country, it was a moment when I said, this is why we do this work. And I think about, I thought about my own upbringing, having facing three evictions and housing insecurity. I want to stop that level of cycle that I went through for many children and families myself. And so that was definitely one of those moments. But I would say also with the building of the Mental Health Emergency Center, you know, giving people some level of access, closer access. 70% of the clients that we were seeing at the Behavioral Health Division in Wauwatosa, you know, lived in or around the King Park neighborhood. And so to bring this level of investment back to this community, and not just with that, even with the Health and Human Service building, a building that many people have been complaining about for the longest of time because it's not even accessible. Those are the things that make me go, I'm glad I'm here. The level of NIMBYism that has somewhat subsided in suburban communities because they know how much affordable housing or workforce housing is needed. Those are the times where I'm like, okay, this is great. But I will also say it's also a moment where I'm saying we have to capitalize off this momentum and we have to do even more. We have to go bigger. We have to go bolder or it's time to go home.
Well, and with your second term just starting, there will be more to come. But for today, County Executive Crowley, thank you so much for joining me.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
David Crowley is the Milwaukee County Executive. He took the oath of office to begin his second term last week. WUWM has a new politics podcast called Swing State of the Union. It explores why Wisconsin is a deeply purple state and why Wisconsin is so important in this election year. The first and second episodes are available now, and you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. The next episode drops this Wednesday. In about 15 minutes, we'll speak with one of the finalists who was on the reality dating show Farmer Wants a Wife. We'll find out what her experience was like and if she was able to find love. But first, we'll learn about the progress being made in Peshtigo, Wisconsin to mitigate PFAS in drinking water. That's coming up on Lake Effect. on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The Environmental Protection Agency recently took steps to limit forever chemicals known as PFAS in drinking water. It's the first time in more than 20 years the EPA has put out regulations on the man-made chemicals in drinking water. That's good news for the people of Peshtigo, Wisconsin. It was the first community in the state to document PFAS in drinking water. Two residents, Cindy Boyle and Jeff Lamont, have been fighting to protect residents from PFAS. They joined WUWM environmental reporter Susan Benz to discuss how this step is helping their mission to keep the community safe and healthy.
Take us back in time, and Tyco was aware of this contamination before it went public.
We found out about it on fall of 2017. And Tyco knew about it since, I believe it was 2013, and they had failed to report it to the WDNR.
And they let us drink this for 4 more years before they notified the public.
Absolutely. You know, it has been industry's playbook, and in our community's case, Tyco Johnson Control's playbook, that they will do as little as possible until they are publicly called out on it and demanded to take action, or made to do the very minimum around what enforcement entities like the WDNR and hopefully the EPA will require of them.
We're still hoping that the EPA will push for the Marinette to share their public water supply with us. Marinette is only using 40% of the capacity of their water treatment plant. And the area that's most impacted is literally within a quarter mile to a half a mile of the city limit. So easy for them to extend their infrastructure to us.
What is the DNR's role at this point? Standing by in the wings, being aware of what's going on, or your hopes are really lie with the EPA now?
Well, first of all, I don't think that the WDNR has been a bystander throughout these last 7 years in any way, shape, or form. I think, but for the WDNR, our community would not have awareness, education, any kind of bottled or supplemental water solutions, whether they're people are in the plume, the designated area that Tyco's admitted responsibility to, or the extended investigation area. I think that the WDNR has been exceeding expectations, albeit, you know, it's difficult. They would always benefit by more funding and manpower, but we are grateful for their engagement and their persistence in doing as their mandate dictates of them. They've been doing a very good job for that, and we're grateful.
Where are you all now funneling your attention? You just came out of a 2-hour meeting, I think you said, of your core group. What are you pushing ahead on now?
In the last year, I've directed my effort, and many of us have directed our effort to state advocacy for groundwater standards, right? There's drinking water standards now at the federal level. We still, as Wisconsinites, have zero groundwater standards, so we are actively working on that. We're working in regional capacities with the Great Lakes PFAS Coalition. We all work at different times of the year at the federal level, going to DC and advocating for the hazardous standards to have been designated, the drinking water standards to have been passed and made into rules. So we've all done our stints at the federal level doing advocacy. And it's been a very, very productive year, not just through the efforts of those of us on this call, and certainly not through the efforts of just those of us in Wisconsin, but across the country.
Yeah, we spent a lot of the year as well, trying to influence Senate Bill 312, which was designating, different programs to spend the $125 million trust fund that the legislator put in place. Now it's been in the bank for almost a year. So a matter of fact, last month I was in the Capitol behind the governor when he vetoed it. And like Cindy said, we've both been in DC doing advocacy for the Great Lakes and for PFAS standards. We still don't have that groundwater standard. We want to start doing some SOH2O listening sessions. We want to talk about why there hasn't been anything happening on the biosolids investigations for well over 5 years after they promised to do so. We want to talk about that even though there was a law that we were instrumental in getting in place, which said putting no PFAS down the sanitary sewer, they're still doing it. And that PFAS is still going into the biosolids in the city of Marinette. So we just discussed and kind of formalized that we're going to be working on some more community education and outreach for the year here, in addition to continuing to push for a state standard, et cetera.
You know, I'd like to point out too, Susan, because I think it's a logical assumption. When people hear that progress is being made at the federal level regarding a drinking water standard, drinking water means a public utility, not those of us who are on private drinking water wells. The public might then say to themselves, well, you've got progress on a rule for drinking water. You've got progress on a rule for
surface water.
Well, you've got a progress on the rule at the federal level for hazardous substance designation. It's only a matter of time before the federal government will then provide a federal rule for groundwater. No, the federal government does not have jurisdiction over groundwater. So we have only one path forward, and that is through the state legislative body to get that to happen. So that's why we are relentless about our efforts, but why it is also going so slowly.
You've experienced so much over these years. What at this point do you consider to be a milestone or a series of milestones that you feel we can get here as a community, we can achieve clean drinking water sustainably for our community? And what's the greatest obstacle?
The greatest obstacle? Believe it or not, one might say funding, but that's not the current greatest obstacle, because there is significant funding around emerging contaminants, specifically PFAS, coming down through the bipartisan federal infrastructure bill, coming into the states, which should, of course, make their way down to individual municipalities to provide solutions and outcomes for public safety. The biggest obstacle is that industry is very good at protecting their interests. They are very influential, and they're very good at it. So that continues to be an obstacle. And this is what I like to point out more recently. The fact that two rules were recently put into place, keep in mind that drinking water rule, that had not happened in 30 years. A drinking water rule was not put in place like that for, under the Clean Water Act for 30 years. The hazardous substance designation had not been done in 40 years. So what that tells you is two things. It tells you industry is very good at protecting their interest through their lobbying efforts, but it tells you equally just how much science there is out there verifying and validating the harm around PFAS that those two rules still were put into place. So we have to look at that in its collective sense. Around our community, I think our objectives now are let's see, although it is painfully slow, the EPA's process, and our community knows what that looks like because, as Jeff referenced earlier, the Menominee River had been designated as a Superfund site for its arsenic contamination, and it took 30 years for that to get delisted. That was a much smaller problem, much smaller in scale and scope and area. So will it take decades for our community to see outcomes? Absolutely. And as I've said to Jeff, I guess if I have to measure progress in decades, it's better than doing it in lifetimes. And that's the reality that we're with, and that's the reality we'll live. So I'm encouraged that the EPA is here. They're doing an initial site investigation. I think it's important that we as a community continue to engage with them, whether it be individually or through SOH2O or all of the above, letting them know, you know, that there is still a will and desire from impacted residents that we want to do the work, that we want to hold responsible parties accountable, that we want remediation through current technologies for surface water, soil, groundwater, air deposition, all of that. We're going to demand that we be treated better than our community has for decades.
So any closing thoughts?
The fight continues. My comment is always onward. Our community does not have permanent safe drinking water. Our state does not have groundwater standards. And until those things are in place, onward. The fight continues. This is going to be a lifetime battle. The good news is there is huge growing awareness and attention and funding and rulemaking around the topic of PFAS. 7 years ago, no one knew what that meant. And although it feels exhausting and sometimes might even feel futile, if you step back and you make a list of all of the outcomes that are the direct result of communities who are impacted like us, of innocent landowners like us, who organized, advocated, educated, demanded. We are now seeing significant outcomes, and there is measurable federal awareness, and that matters.
Cindy Boyle and Jeff Lamont are residents of Peshtigo, Wisconsin, a community grappling with PFAS contamination. They spoke with WUWM environmental reporter Susan Bentz. In a statement from Tygo to WUWM, they said in part, quote, "We continue to set the standard for what good PFAS action looks like, including the installation of 118 new private wells." They go on to say, quote, "PFAS is a complicated and pervasive issue in Wisconsin, and we'll continue to follow it," end quote. You can find the full statement and more of Susan's reporting on PFAS at WUWM.com. A new season of Bubbler Talk is underway, but we still need some new questions. Submit your questions about the Milwaukee area at WUWM.com. Then listen for new episodes starting on Thursdays during Like Effect and Fridays during Morning Edition. We'll take one more break and then speak with a Wisconsinite who was a finalist on the reality dating show, Farmer Wants a Wife. Find out if she found love next on Like Effect on 89.7 WUWM. This is Like Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. How far would you go for love? Wisconsin's Grace Girard saddled up and joined Fox's reality dating show, Farmer Wants Wife, in hopes of a rural romance. On the show, four farmers from across the country are set up with a crop of single women from big cities to show them life on the farm. The season finale aired last week, and Girard was one of two women left vying for farmer Brandon's heart.
Grace and I have this really good emotional connection.
I'm really looking forward to now seeing where things might go.
Lake Effect's expert Nunez spoke with Girard ahead of the season finale and learned if she lassoed her farmer's heart on the show.
Grace, last time we chatted, the show had just come out and viewers were getting to know you and seeing your connection with Brandon grow. Mm-hmm. But for people who haven't had a chance to watch the show, you are one of two girls left on the farm. I knew you'd make it far.
So, thank you.
By the time we're talking, the finale hasn't aired yet, so I haven't watched it. You haven't watched it. Mm-hmm. But catch me up. Like, what is going on?
Yeah, so it's a crazy ride. I feel like it's been a long time coming. We went through a lot of different girls on the farm. So within the first few weeks, three girls left the farm. And then most recently, Joy left the farm after Emerson arrived. So Emerson was kind of a little plot twist. She was brought onto the farm as an extra girl. And then Joy left, and it was me and Emerson. And so we are the final two that's left. Emerson's from Iowa, so we're both Midwest girlies. And Brandon has to make a decision between the two of us.
Kind of like set the scene for me a little bit first. How long had it been since your hometown? when you saw him again?
Great question. It had been about a week since my hometown when I flew back to Colorado and was back on the farm seeing Brandon again for the first time in a while.
Yeah, I was going to say, does that feel like a while?
Yeah, it definitely did, especially because you're so used to like literally living together and traveling with each other for 6 weeks at that point, and then you get separated for hometowns. And he went to my hometown, and then he drove all the way down to Iowa and went to Emerson's hometown. So that whole time I was kind of just trying to keep myself busy. And then finally I flew back to Colorado, and it had felt like forever.
And I'm sure that, like, during this time where you guys are separated for that week long, you're having conversations with your family, with your friends, with yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, what's going through your mind during
that
week?
Yeah, it was a tough week, I feel like, for sure, because I was finally able to see my friends. But, of course, I had to catch them up on everything that was going on, which was really difficult because I was trying to condense 6 weeks into just, you know, a dinner conversation. They were all trying to analyze what was happening or, like, what Brandon might do in the finale. And I was trying to figure it out myself. And there's a lot of thoughts going through your mind at that point. And then also, of course, my family had just met him for the first time, and that was super important to me to get their opinions. And so I was trying to just gather as much information as I could from all of my favorite sources and trying to figure out what was going to go down.
Yeah, because I feel like you have to do a lot of like self-reflection of like, what is it that I want? Again, even though this is really entertaining and so fun to watch, it's your life.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like kind of crazy. I mean, I didn't really realize that I might find my person throughout all this process. And it's crazy to think about that my love story could be a part of a reality TV show.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so it's been a week. You're back on Brandon's farm. What's going on? Like, do you need to, like, find a dress or, like, what's, like, what is the process?
Yes, that's a great question. I definitely did need to find a dress. We were back to square one with, like, what I wanted to wear. So while I was home, I did a ton of shopping. I ended up going to Anthropology in the Third Ward and finding a dress that suited this situation. But how do you even dress for this? And flew back. And, yeah, it was just kind of, like, a whirlwind. I mean, and we did, like, a couple more, like, little off-to-the-side interviews. And then, you know, the next day after I landed, we were doing the final pick.
No way.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. quick of a turnaround?
Yes, it was crazy.
Were you, like, processing it, like, I could be engaged right now?
Yeah. Like... yeah, there definitely is that thought for sure. And, like, it's just crazy because, you know, obviously the decision goes both ways. And I had declared that I had feelings for him. And it was kind of just like, I don't know what he's going to do. I mean, he has to either meet me halfway or we decide this is the end. It's either, like, you're going to go through a massive public breakup or you're going to move forward with each other. So it was a lot.
So, like, I guess going into it, did you know if he does propose, this is something that I'm into and I want, or were you still kind of like on the fence? Like, what was going on?
Yeah, I mean, there is like definitely there was some doubt for sure. I think, you know, just throughout this whole process, I was always second guessing how real his feelings were for me. He was trying his best to indicate where his head was at. But at the same time, you just always wonder, like, if he has deeper feelings for one of the other girls he's dating at the same time. So I feel like there's a lot of doubt with that and insecurities that come from that. But it also just taught me to be, like, confident in my feelings and putting them out there. And no matter the outcome, like, I was still true to myself. So I feel like that was the end goal. But, you know, you're still walking out there and wondering if he's going to meet you there.
That's so vulnerable. So is that how that happens? You just stand out there and then...
Yeah, it was like a full day of filming. You know, we had to get fully made up and get our hair done and our dresses on early in the morning. And then Emerson and I both like got in the car and we were kind of just separated from there. So we were kind of just waiting around. I mean, I was waiting around for a little bit and then finally it was like my turn. And so they drove me up in a car and I'm sitting in the back seat, like trying to just take deep breaths. And then they tell me to get out of the car and to walk to Brandon. And I got out and I'm like walking through, you know, this beautiful area. It was this gorgeous. It's his stepmom's house where we filmed it. And it's on the Rio Grande River, and it was stunning. So that was, like, the first thing I saw when I got out of the car. And then I saw Brandon, and I started walking towards him, and I was just, like, it was probably the most nervous I had been the whole season.
Really?
Yeah.
I can imagine. Were you getting emotional at all?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it was emotional. Him and I both cry during it. There's some tears, just, like, that this whole process has culminated in this moment, and, you know, you just don't know what all is going to come out of it.
So what happens?
So Brandon, I walk up to him and I really couldn't get a read on him, to be honest. I was like super, you know, you're just like all these thoughts are going through your mind and you don't know what's going to happen. And I was still feeling good about where I was at with him as far as my heart, what I was feeling. But he started this kind of speech and he was like, how do you feel about me? And I was like, Brandon, I really appreciate you and like all of the kindness and all of the love that you showed and all of the girls that have been with you. I feel like you've been really open about this whole process and genuine and yourself and super thoughtful. And then he basically was like, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this and talking to a lot of my people about this, just as I had done as well. And he said that he wanted to try it out with me. So,
oh my God. So yeah. Like, I'm like shaking. So like, how did you, I guess, how did you react to that?
Yeah, moment? No, I was ecstatic. I was immediately like, oh my gosh, I don't know why I was even freaking out. I, you know, it's kind of like all those thoughts lead to that moment. And then all of your doubts are like completely eliminated because just with those words, you know, I feel like I was like, okay, all this hard work has led up to this moment and, you know, he's meeting me halfway. So I was super happy.
It's almost like full validation finally.
Absolutely.
It's you. Like, yeah, I want to be with you.
Exactly. And I am so, I'm such an advocate for like putting yourself out there no matter what the outcome is going to be. But I feel like it was just awesome to like have him wear his heart on his sleeve as well and for us to be vulnerable together in that moment.
So what happens after, I guess? Yeah.
Yeah. So I decided, I actually had asked production if I could move my flight back and they said, sure. So we wrapped and we got to kind of just celebrate with the crew who we had grown to love also. They have become really good friends of mine. So they went on their way and Brandon and I went to get dinner with his parents and then I stayed the weekend in Alamosa and we just hung out and got to be like alone together without all the crew on us at all times. And then I flew home.
Oh my God. And then secret begins.
Yes, exactly.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. We've come a long way.
We have come a long way. Yeah, I can't even imagine what the, at least having that weekend together must have been like.
Yeah, it was awesome because I feel like I was able to see like he was really being himself the whole time, even though the cameras were on us. It was super validating to see that. And I feel like to be myself and show him all sides of me after the cameras had left as well.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And so what ultimately made you decide, yes, he's the one in that moment?
Yeah. Ultimately, I feel like I had just seen a lot from him and a lot of like self-reflection from him. I had been going through that process throughout this entire filming time and everything that was going on. And I feel like I had seen that in him as well. Really see him like stand up for us in moments, for him to advocate for, you know, all of his relationships and like for his decisions and to be confident in those. And I feel like that's what really attracted me the whole time, is just continuing to see that and see like how sure of himself he was in choosing me. I feel like that was just kind of the ultimate confident move.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
Okay. So when I was like watching it, I totally felt like I could see them together. But I think what I was worried about was the aspect of basically the farm.
Yeah.
It was like you moving to the
sure.
farm.
Yeah.
Me all worried for you. But like, no, like actually worried about, oh, this might not be something
sure.
that she would want to do, or this is going to be really difficult. That must have come into play in
yeah.
your decision.
No, that's a great question. Brandon and I had actually had a conversation about that. And I think something that he was attracted to in me was I was pretty adamant about keeping my own job. I didn't really want to be a part of the family business if I decided to move to the farm. I wanted to have my own career path. So it's super important to me to like keep that separate in a marriage, because I feel like I'm always going to have that interest in being a professional. So I had always said, like, I'll find a remote job and I'll just move out there and have my own communications job, because remote jobs are so much more accessible nowadays. So that was kind of always the plan. And he would continue on with the farm work and I would help out where I can. Like, we went through a day where we were trying to figure out, like, how something works with the potato computers. That sounds crazy, but there's all these computers in the potato storage that make sure the temperature and the dryness and the moisture is okay. And so he was like, this is definitely something you can do. Like, you can drive by after work and just check and make sure everything's okay. And I was like, yeah, 100% I can help out with something like that. You know, I'm like, I'm not going to be out here every day because it's just not my passion. It's your passion, but I definitely will have my passion wherever it needs to be.
I love that. Those are big conversations to be having within planning a marriage.
Yeah.
So I guess, what did the show teach you about dating and like who you were looking for to date? I don't know about that experience.
No, that's a great question. I feel like for me, it's been super interesting. I'm sure a lot of people will feel this way, but like after you get out of a relationship, it's easy to look back on that past relationship and see where things went wrong or where things went right because you've taken a step away from it. What's interesting for me is like going through this process and whether or not we're out of the relationship, I'm able to like look back on all of the ways that we've done good and the ways that we've done bad through the show, and just to like see all of that play out. And it's kind of like you're getting a little moment of introspection and reflection just by watching all of that and like thinking about what went down in that moment. So it's been really cool. I feel like I've been able to reflect on a lot of things. I feel like for me, just really putting myself out there and not being afraid of the outcome because you know you just did right by yourself. So that's really important to me now. I think I've just become a lot more confident in a lot of aspects of my life and just being able to show up for myself.
That's amazing. Do you have any advice for people who might be interested in looking for love on the farm next?
Yeah, so they actually just opened casting for season 3. I would say you should definitely just take time to think about if this is the right situation for you to find love in. I think it's a lot to be in front of a camera and trying to put yourself out there and to find love and also kind of deal with living with multiple people and having the cameras on you at all times, being mic'd up a lot. And I feel like that's just something that you have to take into account. Make sure that you have just like the mental capacity and the emotional capacity to do that and to stay true to yourself. It's not as easy as saying you're either an extrovert or you're an introvert and the extroverts are going to be able to do this and the introverts aren't. But I also will say that as far as social recharge and like making sure that you're mentally okay throughout the process, there's not a lot of time for that. So I think definitely consider that if you're looking on to going on a show like this. But at the same time, it really opened my eyes to that lifestyle. I think like agriculture-wise, I didn't know anything about it. So that was awesome to gain new experiences and to gain a new appreciation for people who work in that industry. So yeah, I would say like go for it, but also just make sure that you're taking care of yourself throughout the process and like making sure that you're in the right headspace to go into something like this, because I think you probably noticed early on there were some girls that were not prepared for all of the cameras and all of the people around you at all times and like also trying to find love on top of that.
Yeah, kind of just know what you're signing up for. Like, yeah. It all sounds fun and amazing, but it's tough.
It is. It is for sure. It was emotionally very, very taxing. But, you know, since it's been over, I have a massive appreciation for the experience and I would definitely do it again.
And you know what I really loved about Farmer Brandon's girls was like, you guys got along. I could totally see you and Joy were friends. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Joy and I are really close still. You know, we had a week alone where Reba and Annalise had left and then before Emerson came. So we really bonded that week. We were kind of just loving our little routine together. And Brandon was hanging out with us when he could, when he wasn't working or when we weren't filming. And it was awesome. Like, it was beautiful. I think her and I have gained like a lifelong friendship from that. So I think it's just a matter of also just not having like a super jealous disposition. And I was really adamant about focusing on my relationship with Brandon and not getting caught up in his relationships with other women. So I think that was super helpful in building that friendship too.
That's a good headspace to be in. Mm-hmm. So my last question is, what's next?
What's next is, you know, I feel like I'm just gonna keep navigating my life. I plan on just kind of like trying to interact with the Farmer Wants a Wife fans as much as possible, but also kind of like moving on. It's been such a wild ride. I am like so appreciative of it. I'm getting emotional thinking about it. This summer, I plan on going to a lot of concerts. I'll be at a lot of country festivals and just kind of hanging out Wisconsin, enjoying Wisconsin summers, plan on hanging out with family and friends and just seeing where that goes. So really a lot of just like focus on myself, and you know, if I am in a relationship, you guys will know, and be working on that for sure, and we'll see what happens.
Ride that country train.
Exactly. No, I'm like loving it.
Close this beautiful chapter of your life.
Yeah.
Grace, I really appreciate you for talking to me and sharing like all of this amazing experience with me.
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. I really appreciate you having me on again.
Thank you. Grace Girard is from Caledonia, and she won Farmer Brandon Rogers' heart on Fox's reality dating show, Farmer Wants a Wife. She spoke with Lake Effect's ex Grit Nunez ahead of the season finale. You can watch the cast reunion episode and learn what's happening with her relationship this Thursday at 8 p.m. on Fox. And that's Lake Effect for today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. If you've missed any of today's conversations or you'd like to take Lake Effect on the go, simply download our podcast. Search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to listen to all of our shows on demand. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll learn about this summer's outlook for wildfires and what you can do to prevent them. That's tomorrow at noon on Lake Effect, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.